Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. First up on today's show, the early 2010s was a difficult time for organic farming in Western Canada. About 400 producers dropped out of organic from 2009 to 2013, and the industry was struggling to attract new entrants. The last 5 years has been a much different story, as acreage and the number of organic farmers has been booming. Marla Carlson, Executive Director of Sask Organics, is here to talk about the organic resurgence in Western Canada. Marla joins us from Regina. So Marla, I guess the organic industry in Canada recently came out with some new data about organic acreage and number of organic producers in Western Canada. What's the title of this report and who published this?
So you can check out the data. It's called the Organic Agriculture in the Prairies 2018 Data Report. It was put together by the Canada Organic Trade Association with support from the Prairie Organic Grain Initiative, Organic Alberta, Sask Organics, and the Manitoba Organic Alliance. And you can download that report on the Canada Organic Trade Association website or any of the industry association websites.
So I guess just first off, the number of organic producers on the prairies, I guess, kind of hit a low around 2013. Can you tell us where do things stand now?
So Alberta has led the way with an increase of 305 producers between 2014 and 2018. Saskatchewan has seen an increase of 199, and Manitoba has increased by 42 producers. And overall, on the prairies, we have 1,756 crop producers.
Okay, so 1,756, how would that compare to, say, 2013, 2014 period?
Yeah, so in 2014, we had 1,280 crop producers on the prairie. So that's quite a jump in a fairly short period of time.
Okay, so just shifting to acres, because obviously acres and the number of producers are not equivalent. Where were you at with organic field crop acres in 2018?
So in 2018 across the prairies, we had about 1.8 million acres, and that compares to 2015 at 1.41 million acres. So that's about a 29% increase in that time period. And half of those acres are in crop production. And we would expect some variation again between sort of that forage green manure versus field crop production, because organic farmers have a 4-year crop rotation. So of course, you know, there will just be some variability by the nature of where various farmers are in that rotation.
Okay, so just to be clear on this, so when I look at this recent report about organic acreage, what I see here is that field crop acreage for the three prairie provinces is about 960,000 right now. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, just want to make sure I check that stat.
Yeah.
And that's obviously that's obviously up from a few or three or four years ago.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So what has kind of driven this resurgence in organic on the prairies? Is this all about prices, like organic prices versus conventional grain prices? What are the key factors here?
Yeah, I think that the price premium does make organics attractive to some non-organic farmers who are considering transition, but I always say that it's like becoming an organic consumer or an organic farmer. Often there's a personal moment or epiphany that pushes you towards that transition. And it can be all kinds of things, health related or just environmental, related. Or for some folks, I think it's just they are looking, forward maybe to spending a little less money on inputs. And I really think, that's part of what's going on now. I know I was just at Farm Progress Show. We have a booth there, talked to a number of farmers who are interested in transitioning, and not one of them asked me what the current prices were for organic, organic crops. So You know, clearly there are some other motivating factors for them in that, and I think agriculture across the board, regardless of how you're you know, how you're finding or experiencing some external pressures, you know, in terms of, you know, export markets being closed down, and I just think that farmers are looking, you know, for alternatives.
Okay, so. As we said, kind of, or we talked about off the hop here, obviously there is more producers, more acres, you know, the trend is moving upwards, but there are some areas of concern. I guess one of them is the number of organic livestock producers. That seems to be on the decline. Can you explain why that might be happening?
Yeah, livestock, organic, you know, meat production, I think, is probably one of the most challenging areas of organic production on the prairies and in Saskatchewan in particular. Part of it can be, you know, lack of access to federally inspected and certified organic meat processing plants. So you have to export, you know, animals to Alberta for slaughter. So that's one of the limiting factors. And I think another can be, I just think that we eat a lot of meat on the prairies, and I think that price point is still a little high, if I'm honest, for organic meat in the stores when you compare it to some of the other you know, some of the other food that we buy organically.
One other area, I guess, of concern or something to highlight here is that it seems to me, based on some of the data, that Manitoba organic production is lagging a bit behind the other prairie provinces. Just as one data point, Manitoba has about 50,000 acres of organic field crops compared to 300,000 acres in Alberta and more than 600,000 in Saskatchewan. Do you have any sense of what's going on here? Like, why the higher adoption rates in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and less so in Manitoba?
Yeah, do you know what? I don't have the information or data, and I wouldn't like to speculate on behalf of Manitoba why that may be the case.
Okay, so no,
I don't have a good answer to that question.
Okay, I'll ask the question a different way. What I'm seeing here is there's quite a boom in Alberta in terms of organic numbers, number of producers and acres. What's driving that enthusiasm in that province?
Well, I think with the in terms of the organic producers, a lot of those new entrants have been in the Mackenzie County area of Alberta, and that is excellent organic oat growing and pea growing country. And I think that that's part of the reason, like, organic oats is in, you know, high demand and steady demand at a steady price, and I think that could have you know, something to do with the you know, the increase in numbers there. My other thought is strictly it's a population game in terms of consumers. I mean, Alberta you know, has a larger, more urban population, and that could be why you know, they have I think it's the highest uptake of or, you know, organic food purchases per capita in Canada, and that, you know, that information came out last year. So you know, I think that you know, there's, yeah, I think that's
okay,
partially why, when you compare, I guess, when you compare Alberta with Saskatchewan and Manitoba.
That might surprise some people that Alberta has sort of the highest rate or frequency of purchasing organic compared to other provinces in Canada. That's a bit unusual.
Yeah, it is. And I think, again, it's, you know, the two large, you know, urban centers, Edmonton and Calgary, are probably largely driving, you know, driving that.
Okay. So last question here, looking ahead, does the organic industry and supporters of organic farming in Western Canada have sort of a goal in mind in terms of acreage or the number of producers? What are you kind of hoping for the next 5 to 10 years?
You know what? You know what I'm hoping for. I don't have a number in mind in particular, but what I am hoping for is that the prairies can, you know, can maintain you know, itself as a leader in terms of organic acres and the export of, you know, quality organic grains. I have to admit, I mean, the opportunity is there. And one of the challenges that I see is really around organic imports into North America, particularly, you know, in the feed area or in the feed sector, and we're already seeing it displacing some of our market. And if you look at our stats, you'll see, especially in Saskatchewan, a significant drop in barley acres and an increase in wheat acres. And although it's not like a direct relationship, there may be some correlation there with, you know, a bit of a depressed feed market and that's largely due to imports of organic corn and soy into the U.S. So that's one of the areas that we're just keeping an eye on. Definitely, you know, the global demand for organic food continues to grow year on year, and we're best placed to fill that market. And SASC Organics and our other sister organizations in Alberta and Manitoba are going to, you know, do our best to support our producers to be able to access those markets.
Thanks, Marla. I've been speaking with Marla Carlson of SASC Organics about the revival of organic farming in Western Canada. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer, and this is Between the Rows. Next up, the federal government recently released its food policy for Canada. When it was announced, the government described it as a roadmap for a healthier and more sustainable food system in our country. Sylvain Charlebois, also known as the food professor, is skeptical about this new policy. He says it focuses too much on small-scale issues like community freezers and gardens. He spoke with Dave Bedard, Daily News editor for AgCanada.com, about the food policy in early July.
Well, the federal government last month delivered its response to months and years of discussion about a national food policy, and for the most part, it looks to be a cut and paste from what was laid out in the federal budget back in March. To recap, this is a $134.4 million budget allocation over 5 years. That includes $50 million for a local food infrastructure fund. The first funding intake there starts in mid-August to support, quote, a wide range of community-led projects that aim to improve access to safe, healthy, and culturally diverse food. There's also $15 million for a Northern Isolated Community Initiatives Fund, $25 million for a Buy Canadian promotional campaign and a new Canada brand, a $26.3 million challenge to fund the food waste reduction proposals in processing, retail, and food service, and $24.4 million will go to programs tackling food fraud, such as the mislabeling and misrepresentation of food products. It also includes talk of working with the provinces and not-for-profit organizations on a new national school food program and plans for a Canadian Food Policy Advisory Council. So the question remains whether all this is what Canada had in mind or what Canada really needs. And to discuss that, we've got Dr. Sylvain Charlebois, director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University and a regular contributor to our publications, op-ed pages, and others on matters of food distribution and food safety. Dr. Charlebois, welcome back to Between the Rows.
Yes, thank you.
Now, there's been discussion about a national food policy for some time, and I remember there being high hopes for what that would entail. So, given what we knew about the party in power, and what were the expectations from your point of view for a national food policy?
Well, I think most people were expecting some sort of vision and a plan, a concrete plan with specific metrics and goals. And so it is a food policy. But really what's missing is our priorities, really, because right now there's the approach seems to be about sprinkling money here and there to support community projects and things like that. And of course, if you are a supporter of food banks, for example, I mean, the food policy is a big win, obviously, because for the first time you're seeing a government recognizing the existence of food banks and they'll actually have access to some cash. But at a much higher level with global trade and how Canada can make a difference around the world and become this agricultural powerhouse, I just don't see anything in the policy that would allow Canada to really prosper and reach a whole new level.
Now, if we look at the bright side here first, what's good about the food policy that we wound up getting? I'm thinking here about, you know, sort of, you know, food programs for the North and that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. So the North is absolutely a problem. We've never been able to make that region food secure. And so an emphasis on this issue is quite critical. There has been some movement in recent years to really look at projects to allow northern communities to become food sovereign, which is important. Of course, this food policy is actually supporting that. But beyond that, of course, you need to look at specific issues around supply management and biotechnologies or technologies in general. How we can actually allow agriculture to become more efficient, and most importantly, processing. There's not much in it for processors, and processing has struggled in Canada for several years now. We've lost over 22,000 jobs the last 5 years. That's 12 to 15 jobs a day, every day for 5 years. And few people actually talk about that. And if you actually want to talk about innovation and economic growth, absolutely critically real economic growth for food, you have to look at processing, and there's nothing in the policy that actually would allow that sector to emerge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some discussion about a Buy Canadian and Canada branding and whatnot, but that obviously doesn't, I mean, that sort of impacts processing in an indirect manner.
Well, yes and no, because of course you can sell corn and broccoli and lettuce that is Canadian, and there's been some confusion around that brand, of course, and when it comes to processing, it gets even worse. So that's good. Other provinces have actually gotten their act together in recent years, like I can think of PEI, Quebec, and Ontario. They have great programs to promote products there. At the national level, there hasn't been much leadership, so that's good news for sure. But again, going back to processing, there's some major problems when it comes to labor, when it comes to innovation, when it comes to capital investments, and again, in that food policy, there's nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been obviously some funding put into capital investments through other programs in the past, but that seems to be sort of on a kind of a just kind of a sort of a case by case basis almost.
Well, here's the deal. It's $134 million over 5 years. Okay, it's $134 million, and Ag Canada is leading the charge and actually has 12 other departments involved. With $134 million over 5 years, you really can't do much, really. Just look at Quebec, for example. Last year, Quebec actually introduced its food strategy. Over 5 years, it's $359 million. That's 10 times more per capita than the food policy we just saw with the feds. So you can clearly see that Ottawa is just trying to cater to certain groups just before the election.
Mm-hmm. And which brings us to the timing of this announcement. You know, that's a relatively small financial commitment, as you said, and a general election just a few months away. You know, was there ever, you know, really a political appetite for a federal government to take a direct hand in sort of developing and managing Canada's food value chain that way?
No, and that's why I felt that this announcement was precipitated essentially just before the summer break. And, of course, going into fall, we're going to be in an electoral mode for everyone. And so you can see that really this was just pitched before the summer, and there wasn't much thought given to it. They actually were adamant in saying that everyone was consulted. 45,000 Canadians were consulted and provided input, but really there was no commitment, no vision. There was no clear answers regarding divisive issues really affecting agriculture in Canada, because we need consensus on certain issues. When you look at trades, for example, and when you look at economic growth in different regions, whether it's in Quebec, Ontario, the prairies, I mean, you do have four or five distinctive regions that actually do need a different kind of support. And so that hasn't been recognized in the food policy, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of consultations and speaking of vision, there's a proposal in the policy to set up a National Food Policy Advisory Council. You know, is more dialogue something we really need right now?
So neat idea. I'm not sure why this is a headline, to be honest. It's just an advisory board. We're not even sure who's going to be sitting on it, what the term of references are going to be for this committee, and what is the authority of this committee, really. We don't know. To make this as part of a huge announcement was kind of odd, because I know that most departments within the federal government actually would have an advisory group. I actually am part of a couple myself working in Ag Canada and with the CFIA. And usually they don't really make huge announcements for these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to wrap it all up here, what would you recommend at the federal level once we know who's running the country past October?
I would position this as a first step. And be modest about it. There's a lot more work to be done, and I think you would need to, we need to set terms for this new advisory group and get to a vision, a clear vision for Canada, not only for Canadians, but for markets around the world. I know that New Zealand, Australia, I was just in Australia recently, and I've been impressed with how they've positioned their ag economy. Australia produces four times more commodities than what they need because their focus is very much about international markets, their brands. Same goes with New Zealand. I think we can learn a couple of things from other countries, and we should start believing in ourselves and to try to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on this, at least going into the fall and certainly beyond October. Dr. Charlebois, thanks for your time, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
My pleasure.
That was Sylvain Charlebois of Dalhousie University, who shared his thoughts on the federal government's food policy for Canada. Next up, American corn growers are frustrated with the U.S. Department of Agriculture right now. In late June, the USDA pegged American corn acres at 91.7 million, but producers and some farm groups think the number is closer to 86 million acres. Here to talk about corn acres and other news from the commodity markets is Phil Franz Workington, a reporter with Glacier Marcus Farm. Phil joins us here in studio in Winnipeg. Hey, Phil.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. So I guess a week, 10 days ago, there's quite the issue down in the U.S. when it comes to the USDA projections for acres. They're sort of claiming that acres are close to 92 million. But given all the flooding and seeding issues in the Midwest and other parts of America, there's a feeling that that number could be much smaller. So what's your sense of this? Did the USDA get this wrong, or what's the kind of sense among analysts right now?
The sense is that among analysts is that they got it wrong. And the sense with the USDA themselves is that they got it wrong, because they came right out. They came out with their numbers and said, you know, 91.7 million corn, but we don't even trust our own numbers. We're going to do a resurvey. So they're going to conduct a survey now, I think, and it will be, but the results of that survey won't be out till August. So there's about a month of uncertainty where, you know, how much corn was planted, how much soybeans were planted. And it was wet. Corn seeding was way behind normal. Soybean seeding was behind normal. The theory was farmers will switch out of corn into beans, so bean number will go up, corn number will go down. The bean number was way smaller than anyone thought, so So there's a lot of, I guess, uncertainty on that front, and they'll, so nobody really knows exactly how much corn or beans was planted, but they know that the USDA's official numbers aren't likely right. And they got the, they have another report out this Thursday on the, July 11th. And you know, the question is, usually that report would base itself off of these acreage numbers, but if they don't really know those numbers, so what will this report show? And it's going to be, you know, depending on what comes with that, more fireworks on the markets on Thursday, most likely. So
I guess what I read a couple of days ago was that the American Farm Bureau Federation, you know, they took issue with the USDA numbers and actually posted something on their website saying, well, our market intelligence says this, right? So I guess, why does this matter so much? Like, why is this number and getting it right so crucial for the markets?
Well, it's the number, for lack of a better term. You know, it's the government number that they put out. So, you know, programs are based off of these numbers, and the crop insurance, and, you know, all this kind of everything stems out from the official number. But if the official number isn't the actual number, then you know, that leads to frustration and nothing is real.
Well, we talked about this before, is that you kind of mentioned that, you know, criticizing or questioning the USDA acreage numbers is sort of like a little bit of a cottage industry in the U.S., but this seems to be going a little bit farther in terms of basically people saying the USDA is totally out to lunch on this. I mean, it seems like things are a bit nastier here.
Yeah. So, well, and it's, I think it's more so in Canada, we say second guessing Statistics Canada is like that. That always happens. The USDA is usually a little bit more respected, or not, like their numbers. Usually people, believe them a bit more, maybe just the methodology, or you know they're larger overall and have got more money behind them, and people generally follow their numbers as gospel more so than our Canadian numbers often. So when they come out and, you know, admit themselves don't trust us, that's So, you're right. It's a bit, you know, I wouldn't say it's unprecedented. I think this has happened before where they've had to resurvey.
Okay.
But it's rare. And
So at the end of the day, what are you expecting? Are you expecting that 91.7 million number to drop quite a bit and you'll see the bean number go up, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, that would be the thought. And because on top of it as well, there's, the whole China trade and Trump giving money to farmers and whatnot, and that was for growing soybeans, not for corn. So that kind of plays into the mix as well. But there's and weather has kind of improved a bit to get the last of the soybeans or some more soybeans in. So they plant some soybeans on winter wheat that's been harvested, but a winter wheat harvest was like they get two crops in some areas, but the that's been delayed as well because of their wet weather. So
all right,
another question mark.
So just shifting to Western Canada for a section, you know, so in June, the story was drought and everybody was sort of worried about canola and canola yields. What's the feeling right now? Is it much more positive, or is there still some concern out there?
There's still definitely concern, and it's more like localized, maybe. Like the bigger picture, like all the, you know, the traders, the big money and all that there. Oh, we've got some rain, the crop is made, and that's great. But, you know, you look down to the localized area, and, you know, the nature of thunderstorms is the one field gets the rain and the other field doesn't. So overall, it may cancel each other out on the moisture. So there's definitely areas that are still dry, and on top of it, you know, we got some rain, which is nice to get some rain in the dry area, but things were late. Germination was spotty. There was, you know, emergence was spotty. And so crops are in different stages, and it's, you know, rain might be too late at this stage in some areas. So the question marks there as well.
So, I mean, I've noticed a few areas in Manitoba where obviously it's dry, such as kind of the Northwest, the Interlake, some places kind of around Winnipeg. Are there other areas of Western Canada where there are sort of pockets of concern regarding just the soil moisture or other conditions?
Kind of southern Alberta-ish would probably be on the dry side as well, southeast Alberta. So it's not really so much canola there, but maybe more durum and that kind of thing that's on the dry side. And then they've also, hearing it's a bit cooler out there as well, so also, you know, slower on development with the cooler temperatures. So that's another area to watch.
And anything else you're going to be watching in the markets here for the next week? Obviously, you mentioned this USDA report that's coming out on the 11th. That's going to be the big thing this week.
That'll be the big thing this week. And then in the background, it's always what's going on with China and who knows. But that if something all of a sudden happens on China, that'll be the news. So
okay. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. But anyway, thanks, Phil. I've been speaking with Phil Franz Workington, a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. That's it for today's show. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.